Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Vacation starts with VA. Whether you're feeling beachy, mountainy, or every-y in between, you'll find all that you love all in one trip to Virginia. Start yours at virginia.org.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Baseball America College Podcast. I'm Teddy Cahill. Joining me is my colleague, Peter Flaherty. Millie is taking a nap. Peter and I don't have time for that, though. We are rolling through the NCAA tournament. It was a wonderful weekend of regionals, and we are looking forward to hopefully another great weekend of supers. Peter, you know, I don't want to be like prisoner of the moment on this stuff. I know that that certainly happens, and I probably got caught up in it on Friday, but Friday was incredible. Six walk-offs. I think there were 10 or 11 walk-offs on the weekend overall. I'm not going to ask you to like rank this regional weekend of in the history, because like neither of us are really capable of doing that. I don't think anyone is capable of doing that. But I will just say, like, I had a lot of fun watching baseball this weekend, and I'm sure you did, and anyone else who tuned in this weekend also had a lot of fun watching college baseball.
It was pretty remarkable stuff. I think we ended up with 10 or 11 on the weekend, and it's recency bias for sure, but I mean, this one has to rank near the top, at least in near memory for me in terms of regional weekends. Everything moved, I felt like, at a breakneck pace. Like, I was sitting here yesterday, being Tuesday, almost like catching my breath a little bit, because I think between the two of us, we probably got, I don't know, a combined like 15 or so hours of sleep across 3 days. Like, it was from 12 noon all the way till about 2 a.m. of just games on games, and really good games at that. Like, it was just an absolute treat of a weekend. So it was a ton of fun.
Yeah, I think the only people that didn't have fun this weekend were probably like Arizona and Oklahoma State fans, and maybe a couple of the other hosts that got knocked out. It was a great weekend. We're going to run through some of those results here and preview Super Regionals. We're mostly going to talk about the teams that are moving on and what they did to move on, because this time of year, A, we don't want to like record a two-hour podcast. We both have a lot of stuff to do in addition to podcasting. And B, you know, the teams that are still playing are the ones that matter the most. I'm not here to relitigate Selection Monday or, you know, like really like talk about like who failed the weekend or anything, whatever. We have an eye towards Super Regionals. And so we're going to start, I guess, at the top of the board. We can start with the Knoxville Super Regional, which includes number one overall seed Tennessee, of course, and also Evansville, the number four seed in Greenville, with the upset of the weekend. Peter, let's start there in Greenville. Evansville comes through there. They are the Missouri Valley Tournament champs. They would not have been in the tournament had they not gotten hot at the end of the year, won the Missouri Valley. They did, though. They get in. They were a four seed. I was a little surprised on Selection Monday when it popped up. Evansville is the four, VCU is the three. I kind of thought they should have flipped those two. In the moment, I thought about like tweeting about it, and then I was like, who is this tweet for? Like, what does this really matter? And maybe it mattered a lot, because Evansville winds up knocking off ECU in the opener on Friday afternoon. Then they hammered VCU, which beat Wake Forest in the winner's bracket game. And then, you know, it got tough. ECU wasn't going to go out without a fight. They win a couple games on Sunday to force a game seven on Monday. Evansville gets down early in the game, but they come back, they win in Greenville, and they win a super regional, or they win a regional period. They advance to a super regional for the first time in program history. They're the ninth number four seed to advance to super regionals. that goes back to 99 with this this current tournament format. I guess, Peter, the question everybody wants to know is A, like, who are the Purple Aces, and B, how much of a surprise this was. And I'll let you address the first one part of that. And I'll say, I was surprised that Evansville won here. I'm not surprised ECU lost. This is the sixth year that they've seeded all 16 hosts. It's the fifth time that the number 16 seed has lost its regional. So, you know, they give those teams a really difficult region that was no different here. You know, certainly ECU was capable of winning it. That's why they lost, you know, in game seven by one run is all. But I'm not surprised that they came up a little bit short. They dealt with a lot of injuries towards the end of the year. But I am pretty surprised that it's Evansville that came out of that regional.
You said it perfectly. Like, I'm not surprised that ECU's season ended this weekend, but I think that everyone thought that it was going to be Wake Forest to come out of there. And Wake Forest, it felt like, just in the lead up to regionals, it felt like Wake Forest was almost being treated as the favorite in Greenville, even though they were the two seed. But with Evansville, the progression of the weekend was kind of like that Vince McMahon gif where it's like he's sitting up and like, I think everyone knows what I'm talking about, but they start off with a 4-1 win. And the story of that one was freshman left-hander Kenton Deverman went he allowed one run across eight innings on only three hits. That was a big time tone setter on the mound. And where pitching is such a key in regionals, and especially even more so for a team like Evansville, where they might not have the luxury of as much depth as, you know, an ECU or a Wake Forest, where they get eight innings out of its game one starter, that's huge. So they go on and win 4-1. Then the bats come alive in that 17-11 win. And I was like, you know, we might really have something here. And they were out to a 13-0 lead by the bottom of the fifth in that game against VCU. Like, the 17-11 score was way closer than the game actually was. And then we get to Sunday, and admittedly at this point, I kind of thought that ECU was going to sneak away with a regional win. Like, they win 19-6 in really emphatic fashion. They go up 5-2 in Monday's game seven. And I'm like, okay, you know, that was a really nice run for Evansville, a great showing in a Greenville regional, but this might be the end of the road. And then all of a sudden, they scored four unanswered runs, and Mark Schallenberger came up with the swing of the weekend. He had a 3-run home run almost off the scoreboard on a left on left breaking ball against Zach Root. It was a really good swing. And he'd also played great defense in left field He and Ty Rumsley, the left fielder and center fielder respectively, both made outstanding catches, I think it was on Friday. And then also in the game seven on Monday, the bullpen came up huge. Max Hansman in particular went four innings, gave up just one hit, no runs. And then Shane Harris slammed the door with a pair of punch outs in a scoreless ninth inning. So like, that's kind of how they got here. And it was a pretty disappointing and premature end to the season, not only for ECU, but especially Wake Forest. They came into the season the preseason number one team in the country. They're the first team since Florida in 2021, I think, to not make it to Omaha as the preseason number one ranked team in our poll. So a pretty tough end for those two clubs, but massive credit to Evansville, because it's been a really exciting run for the Purple Aces.
Yeah, as an extension to that stat on Wake Forest, because I tweeted that and somebody was like, oh, since 2021, so long ago. And so I, you know, okay, like I was doing that research on the fly. I went further back. It's just the second time in a decade, at least. I think that was what I finally settled on, but I think it's actually like the second time in 12 years or something that has happened. So more notable. Also, though, it's not like insanely rare that it happens, but definitely a disappointment for Wake Forest, especially because Wake played second on Friday. So they knew ECU had already fallen into the loser's bracket when they went out and played VCU. So it felt like, you know, after that happened, things were setting up really nicely for them. And instead, it turned out that everyone tuned into Saturday's elimination game to watch Treya Savage pitch against Chase Burns instead of watching that on Saturday night, as everyone had anticipated. So, you know, notable, I guess, for Evansville that they avoided both Savage and Burns. I don't think ECU should regret not throwing Savage on on Friday against Evansville. I don't know if there's been any like pushback in ECU like fan base about that decision. I don't think you regret that. You know, you got to be able to win without him, and ultimately they weren't. And so they're headed home. Evansville is headed to Knoxville. Tennessee had a much easier time of it this weekend. Nobody expected anything different. They sweep through at 3-0. It wasn't like a total cakewalk. They had to play Indiana on Saturday and Southern Miss on Sunday. Both of them gave Tennessee a shot, but it wasn't. This was not, I'll be honest, I watched very little of the Knoxville regional because Tennessee just was not in close games late. And while they were in some close games early, I just was like, well, surely that score is not going to hold. And it didn't. It just felt like Tennessee did exactly what you would expect the number one overall seed to do on regional weekend.
Yeah. And I was honestly more interested, like, from an intrigue standpoint, like seeing how Southern Miss and Indiana played against each other, and neither of those matchups were good either. Like Indiana on Friday took it to Southern Miss in pretty emphatic fashion. And then it was the reverse on Sunday when Southern Miss won 15-3 over Indiana. They had probably their best offensive performance of the season, but with Tennessee, they largely coasted. Like they were down like in the middle of the game, in a couple of them, mainly on, I think it was Sunday, where they were down 3-2 in the top of the sixth to Southern Miss. But then it's like they just flip a switch where they have a couple of big innings and just step on teams' throats. Like it was a dominant showing on both sides of the baseball for the Vols.
So everyone is going to look at this and say Evansville is a massive underdog this weekend. And yeah, they are. I guess to give Evansville fans maybe a little hope. This will be from our super regional preview, which is not yet online for Knoxville as we record this. Maybe by the time you listen to it, it will be. But anyway, soon you will be able to read this online. I asked a Missouri Valley coach, because in our super regional previews, you know, I talked to coaches from the league of the team that's in there and ask them to give an anonymous scouting report so that they can speak as candidly as they want. And I asked, like, okay, so how does Evansville beat Tennessee? And, you know, this coach's answer was it's got to be the offense carrying them. And that's a little bit of a scary proposition if you're trying to win some sort of slugfest against Tennessee in Knoxville. I suppose Vols fans, they're a very confident bunch to generalize the Tennessee fan base. But if any of them are nervous at all, maybe they're thinking back to 2022 when, of course, they were an even, you know, better team than they are today, like probably, you know, when they lost a super regional to Notre Dame at home. Now, Notre Dame was way better than this Evansville team. So I wouldn't be too concerned about that. I respect Evansville. You know, you have to win a regional. It's not an easy thing to do. They're 9-1 over their last 10 games. They just have won a lot lately. They're hot. But if you're Tennessee, this is the, you know, you should not be sweating this weekend.
Yeah, and I that's an interesting take, because I kind of feel like they need another, whether it's from Kenton Deverman or someone else, like they need at least one really big time start or pitching performance on the mound, because getting into a slugfest with Tennessee anywhere, but especially at the hitter friendly environment that is Lindsey Nelson Stadium, it's a pretty lofty ask for any team, let alone an underdog. So, I mean, like, we'll call it how it is. Like, they have their work severely cut out for them this weekend, but I think what also plays in their favor is all of the pressure and everything surrounding it is all on Tennessee. Like Evansville has zero pressure. They can go into Knoxville playing free and easy. Whatever happens, happens. So I expect Tennessee to come out of this weekend, but you never know.
And you saw it. They're an emotional, motivated team right now. Evansville is. So, you know, put a team like that together in a tournament environment, kind of anything can happen, but they're going to need one of those anything can happen kind of weekends. Cause on paper, this is a pretty open and shut case. Okay, let's, I guess we can keep it in terms of the regional or the super regionals starting on Friday rather than going directly down the bracket. So let's jump to UConn and Florida State happening in Tallahassee. Let's start this with UConn, another surprise regional winner. They go to Norman. They go 3-1. They beat Oklahoma on Monday to advance. This is the second time in 3 years UConn has won a regional. I know going into this, Peter really liked Duke. I'm not going to say I didn't like Duke. But like UConn, you know, was clearly the three here. And like they were the number three seed. And I think that they probably were the third most likely team to come out of it. And they handled Duke on Friday. They beat Oklahoma pretty solidly on Saturday. And then it was a bit more like Oklahoma comes back, forces a game seven on Monday. And then UConn just kind of cruised through that. They got a great start and Oklahoma really had no answer for them. And Jim Penders has his team in supers again for the second time in 3 years.
It's a lot similar to the Greenville regional, where if you told me that it wasn't Oklahoma to win it, like I'm not surprised Oklahoma lost. I'm more surprised who came out of it. Like I thought that it would be Duke, if not Oklahoma, but credit to UConn. And they have a really, really interesting roster just in terms of how it's constructed, especially nowadays with the transfer portal. I think they have 9 former Division III players, and these are guys that they were brought in just this year or last year. And it's Paul Tamaro, Luke Broadhurst, Caleb Spurr, Jake Studley, Matt Malcolm, Stephen Quigley, Gabe Van Eemen, Kieran Finnegan, and Cameron Mayer. And the one guy I want to highlight out of that group is left-hander Gabe Van Eemen, who got the ball in the decisive game 7 on Monday night against Oklahoma. Like, he had been the Huskies midweek starter for the entire season. He gets the ball in a really, really big spot. He goes a season high 7 1/3 shutout innings, allowed just 5 hits, all of which were singles. And this time last year, he was pitching for Division III Endicott College up in a small coastal town in Massachusetts. So it's a really good and kind of under the radar story, just kind of the UConn roster and its makeup. It's a very fascinating group. It's an experienced, gritty bunch. And I was really impressed with them all weekend. Like, their experience and collective low and slow heartbeat showed all weekend. Like, they were unfazed when they lost on Sunday night to Oklahoma. They bounced back, as we saw on Monday. They won a couple they won a close game over Oklahoma after a close win over Duke. Like, they are not fazed by bright lights. The game doesn't get fast on them. It was really, really impressive. And it's going to be an interesting matchup down in Tallahassee. Like, I think UConn has more of a shot than people might realize.
I am going to agree with that. I also would just echo, like, what Van Eemen did on Monday was really impressive. He was not one of their dudes throughout the season. That's why he was starting their fourth game of the weekend and not, say, their first or their second. So for him to come through in that spot, I mean, but that's just kind of who this program is. And they don't really care who's on the other side. They don't really care what the score is. Like, they just have a lot of belief in themselves. And they took it on the chin in the first part of the season. I saw them in opening weekend, and they played great on opening weekend. But then they just kind of went away because they played a really challenging schedule, and they lost a lot of games in the first 6 weeks of the season when they were on the road. But, you know, they got into Big East play, and UConn is kind of inevitable in the Big East right now, and they got their momentum right, and here they are rolling through to a super regional. And I think it's interesting that this was a program that was really good in the American Athletic Conference, but they never won a regional, even though they had higher end prospects than they do now. You know, they had Anthony Kay, they had Tim Kate, they had Jacob Wallace, like guys that were drafted in the top 3 rounds. They haven't had those guys lately. They've had more success. There's probably something to be said just for being able to have a little bit of an easier pathway through the Big East. The Big East is a good conference. It's arguably a way better conference than the American is right now. But the American, when UConn was still in it, you know, it looked different. And UConn had a lot harder of a you know, road schedule still. And I remember when they were changing conferences, Jim Penders talked about how good it was going to be for the program, but that was almost more from like a recruiting standpoint, just that like kids in the Northeast, like, you know, like the idea of playing St. John's, or, you know, that's an old school rivalry, right? But maybe it went beyond that. That's something I'm interested in exploring. We'll not have time this week, but if UConn upsets Florida State, that's something I'm going to look at. Now let's get to the Noles. Florida State, they win in Tallahassee. They go 3-0. They beat UCF twice. They did not have the offensive weekend I thought they were going to. They actually pitched pretty well all weekend long. None of the games were terribly, like, they didn't run away with any games, but they also didn't get pushed as hard as some of the other hosts did. It was just kind of a so-so weekend. And I got to be honest, Peter, I think this is literally the regional I watched the least of.
Yeah, it was a very business-like performance for FSU. There wasn't a lot of glitz and glamour in any of these games. Like, Jamie Arnold was really, really good in his start, as it's kind of been routine for him at this point each week. I think he struck out 12 in 7 innings. Cam Smith had a couple of home runs, and it was kind of the dudes you'd expect for UConn, Florida State, who performed well. But maybe the MVP of the weekend for them was left-hander Carson Dorsey, and arguably Brennan Oxford as well, who was really good in a couple of relief appearances. But Dorsey on Friday, just one earned run across a career best, 8 2/3 innings. Couldn't quite go the distance, but a really excellent outing against a good Stetson team. Like, that was one of the better four seeds in the field, and that was by no means an easy game to start off for the Seminoles. And this was a Stetson team that had beat them 10-5 earlier on. Granted, it was in a midweek game, but still, like, the Stetson team came into Tallahassee confident, and Florida State showed really well. So I thought it was an impressive weekend for the Noles. Their offense is better than what it showed over the weekend. Like, they scored 12 on Sunday against UCF. That was the first game the bats really came alive. But 1-9, it is really an impressive bunch. Like, anyone can hurt you. And when you have the ace that you do in Jamie Arnold, and you look at the super regional format where it's best of three, that's a pretty good tone setter, I think, to trot out, as good as you can have maybe in the country outside of a Hagan Smith or a Chase Burns.
I would argue best in the tournament now with Burns and Smith. We'll get to him later, but with Burns and Smith out, like, and Yesavage as well, and Ryan Johnson, like, he's got to be the best pitcher in the tournament left.
I was going to say, and looking at who's left in the tournament, he is the best arm left. So Florida State also has that going for him. But I think it's going to be like UConn. There is no doubt in my mind that they will play Florida State really, really tough. And what the results of that look like, I'm not too sure, but I would not be floored if UConn grinds out a College World Series berth in a game three.
So I guess what that would look like, right, is either they somehow, like, let's just say they lose to Arnold, and like, maybe they have to punt on that game, and then they come back, and, you know, Florida State didn't have Cam Leiter last weekend. Unclear right now whether they'll have him this weekend. And even if he is on the roster, he won't have pitched in like 8 weeks or something. Is that the path you see for them, that like they just, you know, have maybe a little bit more depth on the mound, and they're able to find a way to keep the Florida State offense quiet enough that they can steal two games? No, I shouldn't say steal two games, but that they can win two games.
That's the thing, and I've wrestled with it as we've been discussing it, where that path of essentially a punt in the Jamie Arnold game, where not punting going into it, but like, if Florida State goes up 4 or 5 runs in the middle of the game, like, you know, maybe you shift focus to Saturday, but then it becomes a really tall task to then go out and win two games on the road to advance to the College World Series. I don't think that's a very favorable path. But, and then on the other hand, it's like, is UConn's only way to the College World Series potentially stealing a game against Jamie Arnold? And it might be that, and where it could just be a scenario of grinding out of bats, getting his pitch count high, getting him out, you know, after the sixth or even seventh inning with a couple of runs to his name. I'm not really sure, but I wouldn't want to go into Saturday down 1-0 and facing two must-win games, because even outside of Arnold, like, they're going to be able to throw a well-rested Dorsey. You've got Brennan Oxford, Connor Whitaker's back, and the lineup, we've mentioned its depth and firepower. Like, they can also slug their way to a win. So it's a pretty multifaceted group.
Yeah, I would not take UConn lightly. They pushed Stanford really hard 2 years ago. Stanford really had to work. Now, that is also a little bit just Stanford's MO in the postseason. But UConn pushed that to game three, and Stanford had to come back in that game three, if I'm remembering correctly. This is a team in UConn that is older. They are not going to be phased by much of anything because they, you know, travel so extensively early in the season. This is not a place where they've been before, incidentally, but they've seen what college baseball has to offer. Mild concern for me, not a major one. Like, I think a lot's going to be made of this. I wouldn't worry too terribly much about it, but it is potentially a factor that these games all are at noon. Actually, there's an 11 a.m. thrown in there on Saturday. So it's going to be hot in Tallahassee. Now, that also means that the crowd might not be quite as intense as it would be late at night. So maybe that offsets itself a little bit. You're going to hear a lot about how humid it is in Tallahassee this weekend, I'm sure. The UConn players are used to playing when it's hot. I really don't think they're not going to Tucson to bake, you know, like, hot and humid is just kind of a baseball player's life. Like, I don't know what you think that any of them do during high school in the summer, but like, they play a bunch of games in hot and humid environments. Like, I think they'll be okay.
I was going to say, like, these are all kids, even if they're under recruited, like, they're going to Lake Point, they're going down to Florida and Jupiter. Like, this is, the weather is going to be an NF non-factor. But interesting point, though, about the game times and the crowd, because, and this is an indictment on Florida State fans, like, an 11 a.m. game, like, that's, you know, you don't typically see the rowdiest of crowds. Like, I'd be way more intimidated by going into a stadium under the lights, prime time. Crowds had a full day to do whatever they do to get ready for the game. And it's a very raucous environment. Not saying it won't be, but I think that the 2 day games are a little bit clutch for the Huskies.
Let's keep this rolling, and we will go to Charlottesville, where Virginia is hosting Kansas State. Now, Virginia was the number 12 overall seed, so they are only hosting this Super Regional because Arkansas, which was the number 5 overall seed, got knocked out by Kansas State. K-State was the 3 seed in Fayetteville. They swept through this regional. Peter, this was, for me, I mean, honestly, even more than Evansville, maybe, this was the biggest surprise. Not that Kansas State won the regional, like, that's certainly a surprise, but just the manner in which they won it. They hammered La Tech on Friday night / Saturday afternoon. There was a rain delay that pushed the game over into Saturday at the ending of it. But they had opened up a sizable lead when that game was suspended. Then they come back Saturday night facing Hagan Smith, who Arkansas had held for that winner's bracket game. And they put a 6 spot on Hagan Smith in the 5th inning to end Hagan Smith's career, basically. Like, that was stunning. It was only the 3rd time in his career that he'd given up 6 runs in a game. I didn't go inning by inning, but I wouldn't be surprised if that was the first time in his career that he'd given up 6 in an inning. You know, in the championship game, K-State had Southeast Missouri, businesslike, 3-0, moving on. Just the 2nd regional win in K-State program history, first since 2013. This is a program that, or a team, I should say, that has a lot of talent. Kalen Culpepper, their shortstop's a first rounder. Owen Borema, Jackson Wentworth on the mound. But, like, man, I liked La Tech. I liked Arkansas. And it didn't matter. K-State just, they took it to them.
Yeah, it was the manner in which they did it. That 19-4 win over La Tech on Friday, that was a legit statement. People listening to this, like, La Tech that's a quality team. And if you were looking for a sleeper to maybe come out of Fayetteville, like, they had an argument to be talked about like that. And they hung 19 on him. And then on Saturday against Hagan Smith, it started as kind of a usual Hagan Smith start, and I was watching it and I was like, okay, you know, the trajectory of this game, it's going to be like a lot of Hagan Smith starts. Arkansas's offense is Arkansas's offense, but you know, they'll scrape together a couple of multi-run innings and win like 5-1 or 5-2. And he was through four shutout. He'd allowed just one hit, a single, and it struck out six, and Arkansas was up 2-0. And when they've been in that spot before with Hagan Smith starts, that typically results in a Razorback win. And then in the fifth inning, it was kind of this like the Russians cut moment from Rocky IV, where Kansas State scored six runs on three hits. Hagan Smith's command eluded him a little bit, but potential first round pick Kalen Culpepper, probably all things considered, provided the biggest swing of the regional. And he caught a Hagan Smith fastball deep in the zone, hit a 3-run home run out to right center field. And then, Josh Wintrob gave him a chance to win on the mound too. Like if you look at just the stat line, it's nothing spectacular, but given the circumstances, like you have a regional game on the road at Arkansas, you're going toe to toe with Hagan Smith. I thought he threw really, really well and gave him a chance to win. So, he threw the ball well, allowed two runs across 5 2/3 innings, and then fiery closer Tyson Nabors, he gutted out 3 1/3 to seal the victory. And then on Sunday, as you mentioned, I think SEMO had just kind of run out of gas. Like earlier in the day, they pulled off a really impressive upset over number 5 national seed Arkansas to bounce them on their home field. And then they got to go back that night and compete with K-State, a K-State team that was not playing a doubleheader that day, obviously, because of their win. So I think they were just running on fumes at that point. But pretty impressive run so far for Kansas State. I think that they also have a chance this weekend as well. Like, I don't think that this is the definite end of the road for them. And also a cool story, just given that last year they were one of the first teams left out of the field, and now that they're just two wins away from going to the College World Series.
I mean, they were also a controversial, to a certain extent, inclusion this year. You know, I certainly argued that TCU belonged in ahead of Kansas State. TCU beat K-State 3 out of the 4 times they played this year. They had a better RPI. They had a better KPI. They only finished one game behind K-State in the standings. You know, so I was, you know, they probably could have found room for both, but I certainly would have personally thought that TCU belonged in ahead of K-State. And like I said that on Selection Monday, and I'm sure that I wasn't the only person saying stuff like that. And K-State probably used that as fuel for the fire. Like, hey, like they went in and they played loose, and Arkansas maybe played a little bit of tight, and they won that regional was won on Saturday. You know, Arkansas just, they didn't have it on Sunday at all. And like, it's really hard emotionally sometimes after you lose a game like that on Saturday night to bounce back quickly. Like we see it every year that it happens to somebody, and it happened to Arkansas this year. Just congrats to K-State. That was the best weekend of their season by far. And I mean, they've got momentum going into Virginia. Virginia goes 3-0 in Charlottesville as the host. They played three tight-ish games. Penn gave them a bit of a ride on Friday. Nothing too terrible. It was like a 4-2 game it was a good baseball game. And then Virginia beats Mississippi State twice. They used some late magic in one of those games. But Peter, the thing that stood out to me the most about the Hoos this weekend was that, you know, I have for months now called this the best offense in the country. And that is not how they won this weekend. They won on their on pitching. And some of that can be a result of who they played. Mississippi State is a more pitching forward team than offense forward. And so kudos to the Mississippi State pitchers for holding that Virginia offense down. And in contrast, like maybe their offense gave Virginia a little bit better runway to work with on the pitching staff. But still, I think that's a really significant development. If Virginia is going to pitch now and they still have that offense, because they do, this is a team that like low-key, like national championship. Like, I don't think that's out of the question right now. And like, if you'd asked me 3 weeks ago, I'd have been like, Virginia doesn't have the pitching for that. But now what I saw this weekend, I reset my expectations for what Virginia can be.
They've got their guys on the mound, and they've low key been in a little bit of a rhythm, not a consistent one, which I guess you can't really call it a rhythm then, but they, like, Matt Augustine has quietly put together a really good true freshman season. Excuse me. Jay Woolfolk, best outing of his career on Sunday. He went, I think, 8 innings, which was a career high. He struck out 7, allowed 2 runs. And this was in Sunday's regional clinching game. And this one, the final score was not indicative of how close the game was. Like, it was 3-2 Virginia until the top of the 9th, where it exploded for 6 runs. But Woolfolk was really good. Josevino in his start against Penn was really solid. Chase Hungate out of the bullpen, their sidewinder specialist, who, you know, they can throw him twice a weekend, which is huge. And he has been excellent for the last month plus. And where they did it on the backs of its pitching, as you said, that makes this team a lot more dangerous, because you're not going to be able to keep this offense down for very long. And especially, they swing it especially well at home as well. Excuse me for the spam call. But yeah, like, this is an offense where this weekend, and we've seen it time and time again, over the course of the season, like, the depth is, I'd put their 1-9 up against anyone in the country, where you have weapons in the top, the middle, and in the bottom third. And you saw the bottom third come through with a huge hit with Eric Becker on Saturday night, where he grounded the game tying 2-run single up the middle. So everyone can hurt you in the lineup, but now where they're pitching, like, I am a whole lot more excited about this UVA team.
If K-State pulls an upset this weekend, I guess it looks like them doing something similar to what they did last weekend, where they just have these big innings seemingly out of nowhere. You know, I don't want to, like, make that sound like a slight, but Hagan Smith was cruising until he wasn't. And you don't put up 19 runs, you know, just by, I mean, I guess you could just put up like 2 runs an inning, but that's not how they did it on Friday. So, like, this is an offense that's capable of some big innings. And if they can give a lead to Tyson Nabors last year was an All-American. He looked like one of the best relievers in the country. He's dealt with some injuries this year. He's not the same in terms of, like, lights out lockdown, but he is gritty and he often finds a way. And you might score off of him, but that doesn't mean that you're going to take the lead off of him. And so I guess that, you know, if they can just put up a couple big innings, get Nabors a lead, you know, that probably is the K-State path this weekend.
And they've also got some depth in the rotation. Like, Owen Barama has had a very solid year. Like, that's a lefty innings eater from a tough slot, like an ERA just over 5, 105 strikeouts in 92 innings. You mentioned him earlier, but Jackson Wentworth has been excellent, 110 strikeouts in 81 innings. Josh Wintrob, I mentioned, he threw the ball really well, I thought, against Arkansas last weekend, and gave him a chance to win. Left-hander Cole Weisenbaker has also been solid. Like, there are guys there on the mound that are going to put them in a position to win a couple of games here in Charlottesville. So I think it's going to be a really competitive super regional.
That said, I'm taking Virginia.
So am I, but I don't think it will. Similar to UConn and Florida State, I think to a lesser extent of, like, being a pushover. Not saying UConn's a pushover, but like, this is, like, UVA should take 2 of 3 here, but Kansas State certainly has a chance.
Last one of the Friday starting super regionals is Chapel Hill, and probably the best one of the bunch. UNC beat LSU in a fantastic regional. They won on, basically, UNC won every big moment for me. Like, not, I guess not on Sunday, obviously, as they lost to UNC or lost to LSU. But on Friday night, you know, they get behind in the 9th inning because Long Island scores a few runs to push ahead. And in the bottom of the 9th, you know, UNC, undeterred, finishes it off on a walk-off grand slam from freshman Gavin Gallagher on Saturday. It was like a really tight game against LSU. Anytime UNC needed a pitch to get out of an inning, they made it. And anytime LSU like threatened or actually scored on UNC, the Heels answered right back. Vance Honeycutt hit two home runs to put them in the driver's seat. LSU fights out of the loser's bracket, forces a game seven. LSU gets the lead, you know, carries a 3-2 lead into the ninth. In that game, they put Gage Jump on the mound, you know, bringing him back after his start on Friday. UNC, you know, scratches a run across, sends it to extras. It looked like LSU's out of the game in the top of the 10th with a fly ball, but Jake Brown couldn't haul it in right field. UNC was very happy to take advantage of that two out error. They score, they go ahead. And then LSU in the bottom of the 10th, because they were the home team, they do get a runner to second. You know, they had the top of their lineup coming up. So it's like Tanks, Milam, and Jared Jones. They ultimately do get Jared Jones to second base with two outs, but UNC able to close it out. It set viewership records for regionals. It was super compelling baseball. Fantastic. It should not have been a regional matchup. Like that should have been a super or an Omaha matchup. Like those were two awesome baseball teams going at it. And like, I'm not saying LSU deserved to be higher than the two line, like the way you play your entire season matters. But like, if those games had been played in Omaha, nobody would have batted an eye. Like that was super quality baseball.
100%. Best regional, I thought, as a whole. And then the best game of the weekend was that Monday night 4-3 game, and you summed it up perfectly. But like, I mean, it was just such a good game. Everyone listening to this probably watched it, so there's no need to keep rehashing it, but just unbelievably competitive at bats by Colby Wilkerson in the ninth to tie it, Madera in the 10th to take the lead, and then even in the pre-Wilkerson in the ninth, like Alex Madera, they left the bunt sign on with two strikes, and that thing was fair until like I don't even like the last millisecond it just veered foul and he struck out because he scored with two strikes, and I was like, holy cow. And I was like just winded on my couch sitting watching it. Like I can't imagine being there playing in it. It was just such an unbelievable game between two really, really high quality teams, and probably the best coach in the sport right now, and head coach Jay Johnson. And like you said, if these two games were played in like 10 to 12 days at Charles Schwab Stadium, like they would probably be, that would have probably been one of the best games in the College World Series as well. So UNC, this was a very, very well-earned, hard-fought regional championship. Like they earned every single bit of that, and they got the team, I think, in their region that nobody wanted to see, and which was a really difficult task. And LSU, they're the defending national champs. They're playing the best baseball at the most perfect time, had all the momentum and confidence in the world, and UNC went out and beat them in a must-win situation when they were down to their last three outs. So I could not give enough credit to UNC. But I guess like circling back a little bit, I thought Wofford had an impressive showing, just given the circumstances as well. Someone, I think, tagged us both on Twitter and said we gave like a good little shout to Wofford on our regional preview podcast, saying something about, I don't know, but I guess we kind of called it with Wofford. Like they were really competitive on Friday, taking LSU down to the wire. They had a nice little win over Long Island on Saturday, and then they played LSU well for a little bit in Sunday's elimination game. So shout out to the Terriers, and then also Long Island on Friday night, where they had a near win over top seeded UNC. So just a really, really exciting regional all around, a lot of great baseball, a lot of near upsets. I probably had the most fun watching that one.
Yeah, I have said that like I watched the least of Tallahassee. I watched the most of Chapel Hill, and I'm sure a lot of people can agree with that. It was awesome. UNC deserved a better draw than this. Like that's the number four national seed, and they drew LSU. And I would have reordered the SEC 13 and 17 teams, but geography certainly played a part in it. Like, that's why Alabama went to Florida State and why Vanderbilt went to Clemson. But I do like sit here and wonder, and I sat there and wondered on Selection Monday why South Carolina got to go to Raleigh, or why NC State got South Carolina, and why UNC, the ACC champs, drew LSU. But, you know, whatever. UNC makes it through. They now will host West Virginia, who swept through the Tucson Regional. They go 3-0. They took care of DBU and Ryan Johnson on Friday behind another great Derek Clark start. And then they beat Grand Canyon twice because Grand Canyon upset Arizona on Friday night. And then, they just kept winning. And so West Virginia ultimately had to beat Grand Canyon twice. They did it. And so West Virginia wins a regional for the first time in program history. I was a little surprised about that. I'm not surprised that it was the first time in the super regional era. Like, I was very well aware of that aspect of it. I mean, I knew the stat before, but just looking back on it, it's like so many teams just won random regionals in the 50s and 60s. I'm surprised West Virginia never found a way to win one of them. So they are regional champs for the first time. They go 3-0. It was impressive. I'm in love with JJ Weatherholt and this team. Like, I think they have a very real chance at North Carolina. I'm sure Peter can talk me down from that. But, this team is rolling right now. Derek Clark is so much fun to watch. Weatherholt looks healthy and he's so much fun to watch. And, you know, their brand of baseball, the way that they have to travel early in the season, like, it's not quite as intense as, say, UConn, but West Virginia is very used to being on the road, and they certainly played like a team that did not mind being on the road this weekend in Tucson.
This was the regional we had kind of coined, like, the regional of death, so to speak, when it was announced. Like, coming into it and when we previewed it last week, there was a, like, each of the four teams in this region had a very real shot to win it, from Arizona, the host, even to Grand Canyon, the four seed. Like, I would not have blinked no matter who won this regional. And the fact that it was West Virginia is a huge achievement for them. And I think it obviously gives them a ton of confidence going into North Carolina, but I thought how they did it was really impressive as well. Like, Derek Clark is just, and these are your guys too. This is, for those not aware, this is Teddy's Omaha sleeper, who he said before the season.
Preseason Omaha sleeper.
Preseason Omaha sleeper.
Two wins away.
Exactly. So I thought how they did it was very impressive. Like, they finally got a high quality start from Gardner Webb transfer, Tyler Swatalski, who I thought was going to be a really high impact transfer. He had kind of had an up and down year, but threw the ball really well against Grand Canyon, gave up one run across 7 2/3. And then the bullpen in Sunday night's regional clinching game with Aiden Major and Carson Estridge across 8 1/3 innings, they just allowed 2 runs. So they got contributions up and down the lineup, like Logan Suave, Sam White, Reed Chumley, Grant Hussey. They all had multiple RBIs on Sunday. Brody Kesser had a great regional. And JJ Weatherholt was, like, at the plate, weirdly held in check, which makes this team, I think, all the more scary, because you cannot keep him down for very long. But the best JJ Weatherholt play I saw this weekend, and maybe the one of the best plays that I saw of him this season, was I think it was in Sunday night's game against Grand Canyon.
Maybe it was Sunday. It was definitely one of the night games. It was not game one.
Yeah, it was a night game. Whoever they were playing in one of the night games, there was a ground ball hit into the hole at shortstop to the right side, and then in one motion slides, pops up, and makes a big league plus throw across the diamond to get the runner. And I like popped up and I was like, whoa, like, that was a big league play. And I was blown away. Like, if he can do that, that's pretty impressive and a big time cherry on top to the already enticing offensive profile. So this is a really dangerous team, and personnel group aside, like, who they have in between the lines, they've also got an outstanding coach and human being and head coach Randy Mazey leading them, and it's his last season. There's obviously a lot to play for there, so they're going to be extra up. They have a lot going for them right now, And I think it's going to be a damn good weekend in Chapel Hill.
The Weatherholt thing is really significant from a draft standpoint, because the biggest question about him coming into the year was, can he play shortstop? And I know a lot of people were disappointed in the scouting community that they got a much limited samples, much more limited sample size on him at shortstop than they had hoped, because he got hurt and then he came back and was DHing for a while. And then he finally was put back in the lineup at shortstop, but you're seeing a still healing JJ Weatherholt at shortstop. He sure looks like he's 100% now. And, one play does not mean he can play shortstop in the big leagues. I get that. On the other hand, like Peter said, that was a big league play. And if you're looking for a reason to draft JJ Weatherholt, like that is definitely part of your case. Aiden Major, you mentioned how he pitched on Sunday. That was really important. He had not pitched in a month, basically. His last appearance was May 5th. He'd been hurt. I think he maybe could have pitched in the Big 12 tournament if they'd wanted to. They decided to hold him back, and he looked like he hadn't missed a beat. Like, his control, I guess I should say, was not perfect, but he pitched quite well, over 4 2/3. They'll need him this weekend at UNC. And look, I hate being like, I'll pick against UNC again for the second straight week. I really like UNC. Like, I promise. Like, I argued that UNC was a true national championship contender, like, before anybody else was, I feel like, and that they weren't getting enough attention for what they were doing. And now here in the NCAA tournament, like, just the way that the draw has been, I have hopped off of the UNC bandwagon. If they win this weekend, I promise I'll get right back on. Hopefully they'll let me. Like, look, I picked West Virginia in the preseason as my Omaha sleeper. And if you're not familiar with how we do that at Baseball America, that means it's a team not ranked in the top 25 that you think can go to Omaha. I don't know exactly how long Baseball America has been doing this, but more than 15 years. And to my knowledge, nobody has ever gotten one. I came real close a couple of years ago when Notre Dame was one game away in 2021. I again feel like nobody has gone closer than that. And so I'm not hopping off now. Like, if I have this chance, I'm going to ride it through. And the way West Virginia wins this weekend is Derek Clark gets them up 1-0. I don't think that's not really a stretch to say, like, that happens. He's been awesome. And, then they find a way in the next two games. The problem is UNC is incredible at Boschmer Stadium. LSU knocked him off on Sunday. That was, I believe, UNC's third home loss of the season is all. So to think you're going to go in there and beat them twice, it's a challenge. And the coach I talked to in the ACC about North Carolina this week, like, made the point that, like, hey, it's not like the most hostile environment. It's a good environment, but it's not like you're going into Starkville. My words, not his. It's not like you're going to Starkville or you're going into Fayetteville or LSU or something. It's good. It's just not that good. But whatever it is, like, UNC loves playing there. They feel incredibly confident, incredibly comfortable there. And you're going to have to knock them off their own game in their own stadium. It's not an easy task.
Yeah. And well, I think that plays in UNC's favor once you get down to the postseason. And I think even more so in a super regional setting, you can not toss it out. Not toss an impressive home record like that out the window, because it obviously still means something, but to an extent you can kind of push that to a side. And with that being said, like,
I mean, just to cut in quickly, like, I heard someone in Fayetteville say, like, hey, that home record matters until it doesn't, you know, like, Arkansas was unbeatable at home until they weren't.
Right. Exactly. And like, SEMO knocked him out, and then they also erased an 8-0 lead in the first game. So, but with that being said, like, I think West Virginia wins this super this weekend.
Double,
like,
barrel on West Virginia here in Baseball America.
Yeah, I mean, I just, there's so much to like with them right now. They're battle tested. They brought home a really well earned regional championship from Tucson. They've got depth on the mound. That lineup can really, really swing it. And then, you know, Coach Randy Mazey, he's pushing all the right buttons, and his guys love playing for them, which there's a lot to be said for that. So I think behind another Derek Clark start where he goes at least 7 innings and gives up probably 3 or less runs to set the tone on Friday, they punch their first ever ticket to the College World Series.
there is also something to be said, and every team reacts differently to this. It's not universal at all, but there is a lot of pressure on hosts in super regional weekend, and especially in a situation like this where you are a top four national seed and you're playing a team that has absolutely nothing to lose. You know, West Virginia is playing with house money at this point. Like, they've already made it further than any other West Virginia team ever. They're playing confident. They're playing for a purpose, you know, not only for themselves, but also they want to send Randy Mazey off right. And, you know, I think the Mountaineers have kind of tried to downplay that aspect of it. And I've heard them talk about, like, well, we're also, you know, we're playing for our seniors and everything. And, like, all of that's true, but all of this is a thing, you know, and they are going to go in and not feel that kind of pressure because they have already, you know, proven that they are one of the best teams and arguably the best team in program history. Like, that's already established for them. And so I think that stuff can matter. Like home records, that stuff matters until it doesn't matter. But we'll see. I will, again, I'm sure, be locked into Chapel Hill this weekend. All right, so let's get a break in here. That was a lot. And we'll come back and we'll preview or we'll handle the next four super regionals.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
This next set of supers, they start on Saturday. And let's start looking at the TV schedule. They put NC State and Georgia at noon on Saturday. So let's start there. In Athens, Georgia will host this weekend. They swept through the Athens regional, just like NC State swept through the Raleigh regional. One of the few cases where both hosts advanced. Both of these regionals were, I'll just say it, they were boring. You know, but the hosts handled it. Let's start in Athens, though, because that was a little more interesting, because on Sunday night, Georgia played Georgia Tech in the championship game, and Georgia Tech really gave them a go. But they were not able to close it out. Georgia finds a way to come back and win, and they are in super regionals for the first time since 2008. So the Charlie Condon show, it goes on.
Yeah, and with Georgia, like, they won a pair of close games. They bookended their regional title with two close wins over Army, who they fell behind early on Friday. They trailed 4-1 at the end of the third. But then Georgia chipped away and eventually took a 7-5 lead before Army tied it in the eighth. But then Fernando Gonzalez in the bottom half won the game with a game-winning sack fly. So that was a really, I think, hard-fought win to start your regional with before they really turned it on Saturday.
Can I interject here for a second?
Yeah.
So here's a question. All these coaches that I'm talking to, they're like, oh, you can't let J.J. Weatherholt beat you, or you can't let Charlie Condon beat you. I can't sleep. I had a pitching coach tell me, you know, like, I make decisions based on, like, how am I going to sleep tonight? And if Travis Bazana beats me, I'm not going to sleep. If somebody else beats me, like, I can get over that. If Fernando Gonzalez, who, yeah, he's a veteran and everything, like, are you actually sleeping if Fernando Gonzalez is the one that beats you? Not a slight on him at all, but, like, I feel like I would sleep better if Corey Collins put a swing on it, you know, like.
Yeah, I will say it was a sack fly, so it's like, you know, you're just turning in, like, a quality of bat and moving the baseball and getting it up in the air. But I think that Army can sleep soundly because, like, they gave Georgia all
they
it can
did.
Handle.
They did.
And you had tabbed them, and we had kind of talked about it before, where, like, Army is going to come into this thing as, you know, they're the most mentally tough team in the tournament field, and they're probably not going to be a pushover, and that was exactly how it went this weekend for them. So I think they can feel really happy about its season and how it showed in Athens. But getting back to Georgia, they had that commanding win over UNCW and then an extra inning win over rival Georgia Tech to punch its ticket to Supers on Sunday. But I'm with you where they're like, there wasn't a ton. Like, Sunday night's game was very exciting, but in terms of, I don't know, it's just tough when we go from Chapel Hill now to this, where it's kind of a pretty big change of pace. But yeah, I was impressed with Georgia. I expected them to win this weekend, and they did it on the backs of the usual suspects.
There's nothing wrong with winning boring. And, you know, like it wasn't boring. It was close on Sunday, but I just didn't really think they were going to lose on Sunday. Like, Georgia Tech was giving it their absolute all, but you know, at that point, their pitching staff, they were down to the end of it, of course, you know, having had to play the extra game. And, you know, ultimately, Georgia has a really good offense. NC State, they sweep through Raleigh. They beat South Carolina on Saturday, and then they come back and beat James Madison on Sunday. NC State moves on. Like, they just very, very businesslike. None of the games there were blowouts. None of them really felt all that close at any one point. Honestly, the thing I took most out of this regional, was how well James Madison showed. That was a team that I wasn't sure was going to get in. They wind up, like, they should have beaten South Carolina on Friday. Like, if they were one out away, and then Cole Messina did the Cole Messina thing because they made a mistake to him. They lose an extra innings on Friday, but then they were able to bounce back and get to the championship game on Sunday. So I thought good showing by the Dukes and their first regional experience in more than a decade. I'm not trying to take anything away from what NC State did, but like that was actually what I took away, because NC State just did exactly what I figured they would do.
Yeah, big shout out to the Dukes, in particular Donovan Burke, who I think he threw 6 2/3 shutout innings in relief in their win over South Carolina. And then Mike Mancini hit, I think, 4 home runs in one day, 3 of which went out to the opposite field. He's a really impressive little player. He's got an advanced field of hit. You can see that just when he steps in the box and how he carries himself in each at bat. But with NC State, like you said, there wasn't anything super loud about it. Obviously, you know, winning a regional is very impressive no matter how you do it or who you do it against, but very cerebral. And with them going to Athens this weekend, it's hard to pick against Georgia. Like, between its offense down there and then also on the mound, where, you know, you've got Colton Smith as kind of a tone setter, and then you've got Leighton Finley and a handful of other arms who have thrown the ball well, I just find it really hard to see them losing 2 of 3 games at home this weekend. Like, I just don't know if NC State's pitching is going to be able to keep up. And I think the best part of the Wolfpack staff is its bullpen and late inning guys when they have a lead, like namely Jacob Duden and Derek Smith. I just don't know if they're going to be able to give them the ball with a lead.
I kind of like NC State this weekend. They just are so battle tested against the top teams in the ACC. They did so well all season long. I mean, Georgia's really tough to beat, though. Playing at home, the ballpark obviously suits them. You're dealing with the best player in the sport, arguably. I might say that's Weatherholt. You might say it's Bazana. Most people would say it's Condon. That's fine. But you're dealing with, like, this incredible offense and a ballpark that plays offensive. I keep, like, saying, like, oh, well, Georgia doesn't have the experience. That keeps not coming back to bite them. So, yeah, like, I'm hemming and hawing here. I want to pick NC State. I really do. But to beat Georgia twice with them playing like this, it feels like it's maybe a step too far. But not every SEC host is going to win this weekend. Like, I will confidently say that. We'll get to the SEC host that I think is most likely to lose coming up. I will take Georgia here, but like, you are hearing me struggle in real time with who to pick here. I really do like just like the way NC State has found a way time after time this season, and the way that like they grind at bats and everything. It's going to be a fun series. I do not expect to be calling the Athens Super Regional boring in the same way I just called the Athens Regional and Raleigh Regional boring.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be two or three really competitive games, but I think when it comes down to it, I just give Georgia the edge given the offense. I think they're going to come up with just a couple of more timely hits when all said and done.
Let's go up the road to Clemson. Florida is going to Clemson this weekend. Florida wins the Stillwater Regional coming out of the loser's bracket. Clemson swept through its regional, its first regional win since 2010. I hope that doesn't make me a Gamecock, Coach Bakich, for mentioning that. Clemson, we can start there because it's the easier one. They sweep. It was not easy. They needed, because it's the 2024 Tigers, like they, of course, needed dramatic things to happen. So they needed something late against High Point. And then, they come back on Saturday and win another close game against Coastal. And then on Sunday, Coastal had kind of run out of pitching. And so Clemson won much more decisively on Sunday. But I was 0% surprised that Clemson swept and 0% surprised that they needed some late game heroics at some point during the weekend.
Yeah, two really, really close wins. And then, like you said, they put a bow on its weekend and punch its first ticket to Super since in over a decade with a pretty emphatic win. But I was, as I usually am, I was pretty impressed with the Tigers. Like, this was, it was a really strong showing. We saw their depth on both sides of the baseball. It's a team, I think, that is built. And they're already on a run, but they're built to keep on going here. And they've got firepower up and down its lineup. They've got weapons in its rotation and an emerging, if not an already ace in Aiden Nock, true freshman. And then a couple of solid arms in the back end with Austin Gordon, Sidewinder, Lucas Malstead, who you can go out and throw twice a weekend. Austin Gordon in particular threw the ball really well this weekend, I thought, late in the game. I think also another story, a cool one at that, this weekend in Clemson was how well High Point showed, particularly in its really exciting and thrilling walk-off win over Vanderbilt to eliminate the Commodores. It was their first ever regional appearance in program history, and to eliminate a blue blood of college baseball like Vanderbilt in that type of fashion, I thought was really cool. And then they played Coastal really tight, and then they also played Clemson really tight. So I thought it was a really strong showing for the Panthers.
Absolutely. They did a great job this weekend. And I also want to note that with Coastal losing on Sunday, that brought an end to Gary Gilmore's very storied career. He announced he was retiring at the end of the season, back last summer, and now that has come to pass, and he wins more than 1,300 games in his career. The 2016 national championship built Coastal into a program that, is what it is at the high end of the sport. And so congratulations to Gary Gilmore on a great career, and the Shants showed pretty well for him this weekend as well. Just beating Clemson proved to be a step too far for them is all.
Well said. He is one of the goats in college baseball.
All right, let's go to Stillwater, where Florida State, or not Florida State, excuse me, Gators fans, Florida comes through. They didn't make it easy on themselves. They won on Friday. They lost on Saturday to Oklahoma State. They have to come back through the loser's bracket. They beat Nebraska on Sunday morning. They beat Oklahoma State on Sunday night. Brandon Neely was standing out of the bullpen in that game. I think it was 5 2/3 for the Gators. And then on Sunday, or on Monday rather, we have complained all year long. Like, I can't tell you how much time we spent on this podcast talking about what is wrong with Florida's pitching and why can't they win a midweek and all the rest of that. And like, the pitchers that they were running out of midweeks all season long that were struggling, like, all of a sudden against Oklahoma State, one of the better offenses in the country, pitching in O'Grade Stadium, an offensive ballpark at this time of year, they handled it just fine. And, they go out, they get the win. And I mean, in a little bit of the same way as what we talked about with Virginia, like, Florida has won with its offense much of the season. and the pitching staff has been the concern. And then this weekend, it was more about the pitching, and they were playing in a really offensive, what we thought was going to be a really offensive regional, and it didn't really transpire that way. It wound up being more about the pitching staff. But if that is real and transferable, I'm not ready to rethink the Gators. Part of that's the opponent this weekend. It's a tough one, but that was significant for them that they got the pitching that they did throughout the weekend.
Yeah, there were a couple of O'Brady type games this weekend, namely Oklahoma State taking down Niagara, and then Florida's 17-11 win over Nebraska on Sunday. But I was really, really impressed with not only Florida winning the regional, like that was a pretty competitive pod there with Oklahoma State and Nebraska. You have two, well, and Niagara, you have three conference tournament champs, and then Florida, who by the skin of its teeth snuck in the tournament field. But I was impressive with how they won it. Like you said, they got timely hitting from the guys you'd expect, with Caglione. He had a couple of home runs. He had one that was just like deleted. I think it was 119 off the bat, went way out of the stadium. And then also freshman Ashton Wilson, who had a really great weekend at the plate. But Liam Peterson, a freshman who has really come into his own on the mound, set the tone with two runs and five and a third. But the MVPs of the weekend, I thought, were obviously Brandon Neely, who across 5 2/3 shutout innings on Sunday, he allowed just a single, struck out 11. And then on Monday, in what was another really close game, Fisher Jamison slammed the door with four strikeouts across 3 1/3 perfect innings. And this is the same kind of point we talked about last week when previewing Florida, which was, you know, now that they were in, they can kind of exhale and this pressure can just kind of be lifted off their shoulders. And I thought that it showed all weekend in how they played. They looked a lot more loose. It looked like they were just going out and playing baseball, which was something, you know, it sounds simple, but I didn't really see that a whole lot from them this regular season. I saw it at times, but I didn't see them be able to string that type of play style together over the course of consecutive series or an extended stretch. So I think this weekend going to Clemson, it's going to be a really, really competitive series. Like, it would not shock me at all if it went down to a decisive third game, which I think will be the case.
I saw like a little bit of a, many people were trying to say, like, after Florida won, like, oh, like that's the benefit of playing playoff baseball for like the last month or two, like they were ready for this. Like, no, that's what you saw with LSU. LSU got hot in the second half of the season. Florida was 5-6 in May coming into the NCAA tournament. Like, if you extend that further back, it's similarly, like, you're the same 500 team that they had been all year. They just, I think you're right though, that like they get into the tournament, everyone can acknowledge, like, everyone is 0-0. Like, nobody really has, what you did in the regular season mattered just in terms of what your seeding is. It doesn't hold any other sway on things. And they probably bought into that message quite well. And, you know, they go out and they find a way in Stillwater. And I do think it needs to be said that Oklahoma State has now lost three home regionals in a row. They have hosted a regional or a super regional 7 times in 12 years under Josh Holliday. That's really good. They've only won 2 of those though. And I would have to really like deep dive like why that might be. But I, if you're an Oklahoma State fan listening to this, like I feel for you, because that is as a native Clevelander, like that feels familiar to me.
Yeah, no, it's a it's not great, Bob.gif, especially where it's like, and especially I thought this year where they had a team that was built not only to win this weekend, it wouldn't have been easy, but to also win a potential super regional. I think that in a bizarro world where Oklahoma State wins the regional, they're going to Clemson and they have that 1-2 punch in the rotation with Sam Garcia and Brian Holliday. You know, you get two different looks. And then you've also got guys like Robert Kranz and in relief, who's been nails, and in offense where it's come into its own over the course of the season. I thought it was a team that was pretty conducive to a deep run. So to see its season come to an end like that was pretty disappointing.
This weekend, you know, I got to go Clemson upper hand here. feels like getting the monkey off its back, you know, finally winning at home. That probably means something, but man, like, I don't want to play Florida right now. Liam Peterson really seems to have figured something out. He's going to start game one. You got Cags in game two, and suddenly the bullpen looks so much better than it did 2 weeks ago. Not an easy task from for Clemson this weekend, but I do think that they have the horses to get it done ultimately.
I'm with you. I've got hashtag Clemson in three. I think it will be really close. I think it'll be competitive. It will, when all is said and done, I think be a season that Florida can look back on probably pretty fondly, just given, you know, if it does come to an end, I think that they can be proud of the run it made. But it will be a difficult weekend for the Tigers, but I think that they'll prevail.
Let's go to College Station. We've got Oregon and Texas A&M. Texas A&M swept through its home regional. Difficult game on Saturday. They had to come back in extra innings and beat Texas. And then they kind of rolled on Sunday against the Cajuns. They worked really hard against Texas. I'm not surprised that Texas made them work really hard. Rivalry. Also, Texas plays really well in regionals. I mentioned that coming in, but beating the Aggies in College Station is it's a bear right now. And, you know, Prager pitched well, Sadeo pitched well, Ashenbach pitched well. Like they have some real horses out there that they can rely on. And the lineup was held in check by Texas. That was maybe a surprise to some, but you're not going to hold that lineup down for terribly long. You know, Grahovic and Lavalette and Montgomery at the top of the order, like those, there might not be a harder 1-2-3 to start a game than what Texas A&M presents. And ultimately, like, they got going against the Cajuns.
Yeah, and it kind of felt like Saturday night's game against Texas was a quasi-regional championship game in a sense. I thought whoever came out on top in that one was going to be in the driver's seat for the rest of the way, and even more so the fact that it was A&M. And, you know, like I've brought up a lot of times, mostly when talking about Wake Forest, but Texas on Saturday night, they gave A&M 14 free bases, and that's not a real recipe for success. And it allowed the Aggies. Oh, so bad, and just a really, really poor time to have a meltdown like that defensively, and then also with the walks and the hit by pitches, the wild pitches, just a ton of free bases, and they stack up and they eventually bite you at a really bad time. So that was an impressive win for the Aggies to go out and do that against a rival Texas, and then they cruise to a regional title over the Raging Cajuns on Sunday. So outside of that Saturday night game, it was business as usual at Bluebell Park.
Oregon goes to Santa Barbara and goes 3-0. They beat the Chos twice on Saturday and Sunday nights. Impressive weekend for Oregon. It happened largely because of the rotation, which has been quite good for them all season long. And, you know, delivered again, like Grinsell, Gordon, did their jobs. And, you know, it wasn't a surprise to see that regional be dominated by pitching. It wasn't really a surprise that Oregon, you know, was able to pitch with UCSB, but to go into Santa Barbara and beat UCSB twice, that's a team that they had lost to in Eugene earlier in the season. That was, it was a really good weekend for Oregon. And I'm not surprised that they won. It's not an upset that I had on my board necessarily, but I'm not surprised that they won. I am surprised that they won as not easily, but, you know, to see them sweep a regional, I didn't think that would be how anybody would beat Santa Barbara this weekend.
Yeah. RIP my Omaha sleeper. I guess I can take solace in the fact that they went from, like, quote unquote sleeper to a host.
Solid pick.
But a pretty disappointing end, both given the fact that my sleeper's out, and then also just in general for Santa Barbara. I thought the best pitching matchup of the tournament so far was that Friday night game, or Saturday night game, excuse me, against or between Grinsell and Tyler Bremner. Like, if you're a pitching Nick and a real pitching fan, I hope you tuned into that one. And Oregon throughout the course of the weekend just withstood UCSB's best bullets, and they came through with some timely hitting, and it was punctuated by a 128 pitch complete game shutout by Kevin Setter. And it's now Oregon's second straight super regional. They haven't been to the College World Series since 1954. I think it gets a whole lot harder this weekend going down to Texas A&M. Like, it's pretty impossible not to give the edge to the Aggies. I just don't know if Oregon's lineup's just going to be able to keep up with the potentially, I think this is going to be a much more offensive weekend than last weekend was in Santa Barbara. Like, we had talked about it a little bit, but Santa Barbara was a really good draw, I thought, for Oregon, and played a little bit to its strengths, like on the with the pitching depth and the lack of offense as a regional collectively. I thought that was really conducive for the Ducks, but this weekend's a whole different beast, because not only does A&M have depth on the mound with, you know, Ryan Prager, Tanner Jones, Shane Sadow, Chris Cortez, but like you said, they have one of the best 1-3 in the country, and just lineups as a whole, it's relentless. And they're another team, like a couple of these squads we've talked about before on this episode, but they play exceptionally well at Bluebell Park. So very tall task this weekend for Oregon.
Yeah, it's hard for me to see Oregon's path here, even. Like, it's ultimately to get into pitching duels. Like, that's Oregon's best path almost any weekend. And Jacob Walsh can certainly run into home runs, and, you know, they have some guys that can make things difficult for you offensively. But if they win this weekend, I think they're just going to have outpitched A&M, which is a challenge, that one that they'll probably be up for, but it is a big challenge. The last thing I want to say about Oregon is they have won back-to-back regionals. This is a team that's only won 3 regionals since the program was restarted, which is a pretty good number. I shouldn't say only. They've won 3 regionals since the program was brought back about 15 years ago now. And Mark Wazikowski has won back-to-back regionals now. And in both cases, they went on the road. They went to Vanderbilt last year and won, and they go to Santa Barbara and win this year. And that's not easy to do. And so I think that deserves a lot of credit. And everyone in that program, but especially Mark Wazikowski, deserves a lot of credit for getting them to a point where they can win back-to-back road regionals.
Yeah, he's done an outstanding job, and that staff as a whole is a really good bunch. And I think as long as they are together, especially Coach Waz leading the charge, like, this is going to kind of become the norm in Eugene, if it hasn't already. Like, they're going to be consistent winners. So regardless of whether or not their season ends this weekend, I think that Ducks fans around the country can be really encouraged by the direction of the program.
I tried to run this out on Twitter. Didn't really get a whole lot of traction. How do you feel about Wizard of Waz?
I like it. I like it a lot. I think that plays.
I think the Oregon Twitter account should have paid more attention to that. You know, I don't have a ton of Oregon fans. It's fine. Whatever, that follow me, but
like the Wake admin tweeting out Walt's wisdom a million times.
Yeah,
Oregon can mix in a couple of hashtag Wizard of Waz. I like that a lot, actually.
All right, we got one more of these, and it is in Lexington, Kentucky. They go 3-0 at home, and Oregon State, which also went 3-0 at home, is coming to Lexington this weekend. The Wildcats, they, you know, actually, I said that I watched the least of Tallahassee. I might have actually watched the least of Lexington. Now that I'm really thinking about this, they went 3-0. It was pretty businesslike. They beat Indiana State in the championship game. They beat Illinois in the winner's bracket on Saturday. Kentucky really did what they needed to do. The time they got pushed the most was on Friday. They got up big on Western Michigan, and then the Broncos cut the lead, kind of forced some of the better Kentucky bullpen arms into the game, but they weren't able to ever pull even, and Kentucky won 10-8, and then it was a little more business as usual the next 2 days for the Cats.
I've had a take holstered for the podcast that I'll that I'll let fly here. And I think it works out well that it's the last regional. I think Oregon State sweeps this weekend.
Oh, you think they sweep? Because I also think they win this weekend. That's a little bit of the reason why I held them for last. They also are the last game that starts of any super regional. It's the last one that'll get going. But I too like Oregon State this weekend.
Yeah, I've got them in a sweep. I thought that they looked really, really good last weekend in Corvallis. It's hard not to when you go 3-0. But also the fact that they beat UC Irvine twice and once in emphatic fashion in that Sunday/Monday game that got suspended due to rain. UC Irvine is a really, really good team. Like if they had won the Big West, they probably would have hosted. And just in terms of sheer power ranking of teams, like they are, I thought, comfortably in the top 20 of anyone in the field. And Oregon State went out and took good care of business. And I think going to Lexington, even though I know Kentucky's played really well there, they won its regional last weekend. I think the duo on the mound that you have in the rotation of Aiden May and Jacob Kmatz, and you combine that with the fact of, you know, you have Bridger Holmes in the bullpen and AJ Hutchison threw the ball well. Nelson Keljo has thrown the ball really, really well, especially last weekend. Eric Segura is a third guy. Like, there is a lot of depth there and a lot of weapons that you can be a fan of on the pitching side alone. And then you flip the page to the offense, and you've got one of the deepest lineups in the country. And that kid named Bazana at the top, he's not too bad. So I have the Beavers in a sweep.
You want a bold take because Peter gave you a bold take. Here's my bold Oregon State take. They are going to play for the national championship.
Oh, I love it. You know, I like that one even more.
If they win this weekend, you know, they're in the teams that we've talked about since the ad break, or that would be the pool in Omaha. So it's, if they win, they'd be in a pool with either NC State, Georgia, Florida, or Clemson, and Oregon, or Texas A&M. And a lot of people, if, you know, chalkiness, or if Texas A&M gets to Omaha, a lot of people are going to pick them to win that pool. And like, hey, they absolutely can do it. But like what you laid out, Peter, with the 1-2 of May and Kmatz, and Eric Segura has been pretty good as well as a three. But then I love the May and Kmatz 1-2 in the bullpen. Holmes, Keljo, they got a couple other trustworthy arms. You've got a dude in Bazana who is going to will you through anything. And the lineup is finally healthy. When they lost those series earlier on, I mean, we talked about this on the pod, that they just were not healthy. Everyone is back now. Even Caraway came back last weekend, and he did not play the regional final. I don't know. Maybe I didn't look hard enough, like an explanation of like if they just thought that they wanted Trotsky in there for the matchup or for his defense, or because Caraway needed a break after not playing for so long. But everyone is back for Oregon State. This is the team that you saw at the start of the season. Like they're fully healthy. If they don't get it done this weekend, like they cannot really use health as an excuse, except for the fact that if they'd stayed healthy all year, maybe they would have been a top 8 seed and could have stayed at home instead of having to go to Kentucky. But I feel like this is a great matchup for them. If they had to go to College Station this weekend, I would have felt less good about them. But in going to Kentucky, that ballpark, you know, it can play offensive this time of year because every ballpark in the country can when it gets hot. But it's not a homer dome. And, you know, I just think that they're going to, as a West Coast team, and like the idea that West Coast baseball is different than like any other baseball these days is not as true as it used to be. But as a West Coast team, like they're going to be drilled for the bunts. They're going to be drilled for the run game that Kentucky's going to throw at them. Like, I just feel like they are a pretty good matchup for the Wildcats. And I talked about this with UNC. The pressure that is on hosts this weekend is real, and Kentucky has never felt that kind of pressure before. They have only won, this was their third ever regional win. Shout out to Nick Mingione. They've all come under him. The other two times they went on the road and they were expected to lose. They went to Louisville in 2017. That was the Brendan McKay Louisville team. Of course they were going to lose that. You know, like you can say like the rivalry aspect of it, that Kentucky team was really good, all the rest of it, yes. But like that was an incredible Louisville team. They go on the road last year to LSU. Of course Kentucky was going to lose that, right? Like best team in the country for so much of the season and, you know, ultimately go out and win the national championship, Paul Skeens, Jalen Cruz, blah, blah, blah. Like this at time though, Kentucky being at home, they're going to feel that kind of pressure. And, you know, Oregon State's coming in, they're probably going to be loose. They definitely have a chip on their shoulder. I know they were not happy to be seeded 15th. And while they have tried to downplay the, you know, Pac-12 of it all, you know, it's there. And it's hard for me on the outside to say like how much of them downplaying that is real and how much of that is just something that they're saying publicly. You know, there's a lot, they're playing for a lot, you know, they're not playing for a retiring coach, but they are, they have not had to manufacture chips on their shoulder. That's a program that just kind of lives with a chip on its shoulder anyway, but they haven't had to manufacture anything this year.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more with all that you said. And if there's one guy on that team who is, you know, he will have everyone in that locker room up for it, it's, surprise, Travis Pezzana, because on top of his ability on the field, he is one of the best leaders off of it. Like, this team is going to come in ready to freaking play and ready to roll in Lexington, and they're going to thrive under those bright lights. So I'm happy that you one-upped my take to the national championship, because I do think that's the kind of upside that this team has, like, legitimately.
If you want an ancillary storyline to watch in Lexington, and you don't need it, like, everything we just said should be enough. But I am very curious, like, Kentucky, obviously, you know, they like to have fun and their dugout does fun things. And some people do not care for it. Like, I was watching some like Jack Caglione video for a story I'm writing, and like, by video, I don't mean like grinding his swing like I probably should be. I mean, watching his press conference after they played Kentucky, and he was not happy with like just the general Kentucky vibe. And I don't think Travis Pezzana is going to be happy either. And so I'm curious to see how chippy this weekend does or does not get. And if the games are close, and I wouldn't be surprised if something flared in Lexington at some point this weekend.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Like, the Kentucky dugout is, they talk a lot, and Oregon State will not be afraid to give it back. So that is, I mean, I'll be pretty dialed in to all eight of these super regionals, but I'm going to have an extra focus on Lexington.
Also, the Sunday night game, 9 o'clock local time in Lexington, so everyone will have had plenty of time to get loaded up for that one.
Oh man, exactly.
They managed to body clock Kentucky somehow. You know, like, we often talk about the teams coming east as like, oh, like they have an early start time. This is at least a thing in football that gets talked about a lot, like a noon kick for, or a 1 o'clock kick in the NFL for like the Seahawks. Like, how are they going to adjust to that? Like, if anything, they body clock Kentucky with a 9 o'clock local start on game two.
Oh, that's going to be unbelievable.
Alrighty. So that's the eight super regionals. You can find the previews for them over at baseballamerica.com. We'll have plenty of coverage throughout the weekend. Again, I assume Peter is going to be manning the everyday updates, every game updates, however you want to term that. So check out baseballamerica.com for that. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at Ted Cahill. Peter's at Peter G. Flaherty. There's plenty of other stuff to read this time of year at baseballamerica.com if you're into the draft or the minors. They just updated the top 100 overall prospects. Some dude named Paul Skeens, not really sure who that is now the number one prospect in baseball. So yeah, check all of that out over on the website. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify. You can find us, hit that subscribe or follow button, and we will be back next week to talk everything super regionals and get ready for Omaha, which is crazily enough just a little more than a week away from starting. So it's coming at us fast, and we are enjoying the postseason baseball. I hope you are too. So until next time, for Peter, I'm Teddy. Enjoy another great weekend of the NCAA.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home.
at Cenovus Energy. Our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.